going to make a big deal about it, but I have just got over quite a bad cold.
So. Oh, you poor thing. You poor little baby bird.
Honestly, it wasn't that bad.
When people think of the suffering that's going on in the world, they're not really...
Exactly. That's partly why I don't want to go on about it. Because it's not even a fraction of a lot of the stuff that's happening. You know. Well, everything is a fraction of something else. So, I mean,
but it's the only bit that's happening.
You could calculate it as a fraction, but it wouldn't be a big fraction. No fractions are. Yeah. So, God, you can't have a big fraction. So
you can have a big fraction. What? 9/10 of a Diplodocus.
That's most of it, isn't it? Or it depends what tenth you're missing, but you could be looking at a reasonably well functioning Diplodocus there potentially.
I mean, it depends which tenth you've taken off in terms of whether I'm going to beat it in a fight.
Just a bit of girth.
That's the worst for me. That's the worst possible thing, because that's made it more lethal, if anything.
So it's a slim, lean, mean,
it's a streamlined, it's an aerodynamic Diplodocus.
Recently untensed, furious Diplodocus.
Really annoyed about its untenthing, because it's just bought a new pair of trousers. Which is very, very, very hard, very expensive to make.
Well, they've got to be quadro-legged for a start, haven't they?
They've got to be quadro-legged. There's only a few Italian tailors that still do that.
They've got to be waterproof, quite durable material in a primordial jungle.
They need to be scaly.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, is that why all of your trousers look like a pair of hairy Turkish legs?
That's right.
That's your view on trousers.
I still bear...
You shouldn't be able to tell if someone is wearing trousers, if they're wearing trousers.
No, you shouldn't. That's the perfect pair of trousers. Yeah. That's why I'll buy trousers from a normal shop, e.g. Zara, and I'll take them to a tailor's and I'll say, if you could just bring these in a bit, and if you could just hairy Turkish legs them for me, thank you.
We should just point out that Henry is Turkish. It's not Mike hasn't picked out the Turkish nation's particularly hairy legs. That's not what he was going for.
No, it's not like an Afghan carpet or something, or a Persian rug. It's, we're not just going for some sort of Near Eastern evocative descriptor.
No, they're just specifically, I do have hairy Turkish legs.
Like many of us, Henry's got all sorts of stuff in the mix, DNA-wise, haven't you? But your legs, the Turkish element has punched through hard.
It's punched through hard,
I would say.
It's absolutely no point getting a DNA test on my legs. It's a waste of time. They're clearly Turkoman through and through. I mean, they go back to the earliest Turkoman tribes. You can trace them back to the actual... They say to the original Turk, potentially.
Dennis Turk.
Dennis Turk, yeah, who had the hairiest legs in the region, we assume, which is why he would have become so important.
I don't know if I've ever really had a good look at your legs. I'm imagining a kind of Mr. Tumnus kind of effect.
So is he a children's character? Or?
Yeah, he's in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. He's got the legs of a goat.
Oh, the fawn. Oh,
I was thinking of Mr. Tumble, who's a presenter, isn't he?
I was thinking of Mr. Tumble as well.
Yeah. No, you're right. He's a fawn. Yeah, that's a good shout. Well, Henry is the one who needs to answer the question about the hooves at the end. I mean, that's for Henry to say.
Well, that's why I also get, in the same way that I make sure my trousers look like hairy human legs, I also make sure my footwear look like hairy human feet to wear over my hooves.
Right. Yeah. So it's not the full tumnus. It's not the the small shit clagged tail.
No, that's my own. That's nothing to do with my genetic heritage. That was nurture rather than nature.
That's dietary.
That's dietary. Yeah. And to a degree, sort of learnt cultural behaviour from hanging out with a bad crew at school.
Of course, you've got to cover up the cloven hooves in case people think you are Beelzebub himself. That's the problem, isn't it?
That's right.
That's a risk.
When you've got hooves.
Yeah.
Has the devil got hooves?
I think traditionally.
Cloven hooves, forked beard, forked fork.
Yes, and yet they say that the greatest trick he ever pulled was...
M&M world, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because I don't, like the idea of what Satan looks like, which is kind of a red skin.
Yeah.
Hooves sometimes, hooves. I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Horns.
Goatee beard.
It's like an evil goat, basically.
It's very goat, isn't it?
But ironically, he doesn't have the face of a goat.
Ah.
Exactly. Which is, it ties into our ghost episode, doesn't it? Because, of course, ghost comes from the same linguistic derivation as goat, doesn't it? Goat, ghost.
and grout, grouting.
And grout, ghost. Yeah. they all derive from the same, mm-hmm. the Latin gotus meaning.
Yeah, from the Indo-European for really Larry Goose. Yeah, exactly. Which was felt to be the scariest thing
in those
days. European planes.
Yeah.
Mm. But Mike, if you would allow me to be a little bit like a sort of have a QI moment.
Yeah.
When did that depiction of Satan come around?
Ooh, it's probably because of like Coca-Cola or something, isn't it?
They bought Satan, of course. Of course.
Yeah, they bought Satan. That's why he's red. That's why he's red, yeah. Isn't it? It's the classic branding. They bought the big ones. They think we can buy both Santa and Satan, the two big red S's. We've got everything covered.
And Santander, yeah. Of course. The Devil's Bank.
And of course, Santana.
Santana.
Santana. The Devil's South American guitar maestro.
Central American.
Yeah, good shout. Is he Mexican?
He's Mexican, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry, carry on. Satan. Yes, it's a great topic, isn't it, Satan, to bring people together, I find, isn't it? It's the pitchfork as well, isn't it? Everything's forked because, of course, well, like forks in the road, is that to do with?
Isn't it more to do with the kind of barbecue element?
But things are bifurcated, things are forked, things are divided, aren't they? Whereas the true road was just one straight road.
That's the most profound thing you've ever said.
Cheers. But in barbecue tools-wise,
yeah,
Satan, of course, is the fork.
He's very rarely shown holding some tongs.
Or a spatula. Isn't it? It's true.
How did you get over your cold, Henry?
Oh, yes, I had a cold. Yeah, I had really quite a bad... You know what? Actually, I did actually have quite a bad cold.
Okay. Quite a bad mild illness.
I was in bed for a couple of... Well, a couple of nights I was in bed. But... but quite longer than usual in bed.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And getting up a bit later than usual. So I had a couple of lions, essentially.
A couple of midweek lions?
I had a couple of midweek lions is another way of looking at this. I did have a bad cold, right? And I've learned something, which I can share, which is they say don't
get a blood transfusion off a bloke you meet outside the tube station.
No matter how charming he is. And actually...
Even if he claims to have special powers, he will infuse you with...
To be honest, it's almost the more he claims to have special powers, probably almost the more you shouldn't do it, almost. That's actually what I've actually learned. it's counterintuitive, but if anything... it was a great deal. I mean, I'm not getting around the fact that... But maybe there's a reason why it was such a great deal.
And also, especially if... If once the transfusion starts and he's clearly not using blood and instead using a bottle of Castrol GTX, some motor oil.
Yeah, that's another worry. Also, yeah. why is all that oil, why is it not even in the bottle? Why is it just you carrying around in the Tesco's bag?
Some in the palm of his hands.
Yeah, a lot of it's in the palm of his hands.
And why is he funneling it into your anus? Is that how a blood transfusion works?
Is that how it works? And actually, is £25,000 a good deal, actually, to have Castrol GTX funneled up your anus out of a Tesco's bag? Is it actually, when you think about it in a different way, is that actually a good deal? Do you know what I mean?
Especially when it's happening for all to see on Old Street Roundabout.
Well, yeah. I mean, my thinking was obviously witnesses, but...
Right.
If you're thinking witnesses, again, are you in a safe healthcare setting? if you're worrying about witnesses. So yeah, there were red flags. He did offer me a receipt, to be fair.
Yeah. Okay.
Please say you took it.
Well, it was an IOU for a receipt. It was a non-written. It was a verbal IO. We didn't actually get as far as you. It was a verbal IO. He was too busy to say you, he explained.
But that's probably wouldn't be for a cash refund anyway. That would probably be just for an equivalent sort of service.
Yeah, or a credit note of some sort.
It was for a credit note, redeemable.
Some windscreen washer dialysis at a later date.
Yeah, exactly. So I was offered a full windscreen washer dialysis. Not the fluid, actual windscreen washers. He was going to offer to insert, yeah, windscreen washers down. Well, his phrase was down your fucking gullet, you prick. Was his.
It was at this moment that a plumber arrived at my house, and so we had to take a short break. But then we carried on with the show.
It's not shifting.
Ben's just had a little plumbing interruption, which is not a euphemism for going to the toilet. but you have had a little plumbing interruption, haven't you?
I mean, we're going to have a new tap.
What?
Yeah, I know. Things are going to change around here, guys. Once I'm a guy with
like,
a new tap.
In like sparkling water or something. You say tap singular. What's the? Was this a real ale tap? What were we talking?
Put it this way: the three bean salad merch has been doing pretty well. Someone's
got new tap money.
Not new tap, a tap. Someone has tap money. So it's no longer just the kind of the gushing pipe system. Is it where you have to use a, because you before you used to have to use a spanner to actually
hoik
open
a sort of lever out in the yard out the back.
You had to hoik a lever out.
You're watering the donkeys from, yeah?
Yeah. Your Donkey Express.
We'd use a pickaxe to access the water main.
That's right, yeah.
And then obviously the company would come and fix it the following day, and then we'd re-pickaxe it.
Yeah. And
then,
and you'd, we'd have to shout, release the stopcock! Release the stopcock! And then it would. And it was full water or no water. There was no, wasn't it? Whereas now you can actually choose.
Should also say to any American listeners, we are talking about a faucet.
Yes.
Oh, lovely.
Faucet.
I always think about Farrah Fawcett because I think her name sounds quite cool to a UK ear. But really, her name is just Farrah Tap.
Yeah, but I mean, you can say the same for loads of people, like Jeff Bridges. I mean, what would you rather he was called?
But Bridges are majestic and kind of...
Bridges are majestic.
They're testament to man's ingenuity and all that kind of stuff, whereas a tap is just like...
I think Benjamin Partridge, you are in a glass house and you are throwing half a brick.
You really are.
What, the most majestic bird on God's earth? The most terrifying predator?
It's the only bird that's less aerodynamic than a pig.
It needs to be hit by a truck to become airborne.
That's it. Or shot, Mike. You can shoot it airborne.
It's true. They get shot up into the sky, don't they? It's the only time they ever, just before death, they get to briefly experience what it was like. Oh, this would have been quite good. And then they're being ripped to shreds by a mixture of different types of dog, aren't they? Well, Pam sometimes, probably, if you're out in the park.
Pam. 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 Good girl, Pam. Good girl, Pam. Oh, Pam. 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 No. No. Pam. 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 Pam.
Because dogs, they're lovely, but present them with a jittering partridge.
Mortally wounded partridge.
They'll finish the job.
If Pam saw a partridge, her breeding would kick in like that, right?
Finish the job, yeah.
Yeah, she'd be off like a hairy rocket.
Yeah.
Which, again, isn't a euphemism, but I mean, it's literally...
Well, it is a euphemism, isn't it?
It is a euphemism, yeah, but in this case for a dog, not for a... Yeah,
yeah. Not for an airborne penis. So look, we've got a few chat strands here that we've started. So one is, you know, talking about Ben's taps, I feel like the ghost, it's almost like by talking in a lighthearted way about Ben's attitude to plumbing and taps, I feel like I've been cursed and punished in real time by the gods of the pipe.
What's happened?
My two-part aluminium Bialetti Italian coffee maker stopped working.
Oh, my God.
I tried to put on a quick coffee, right, in the middle, in the break. Yeah. Now, I use the two-part metal, the Italian-style, two metal parts. You put it on the hob.
Yeah, so when you imagine, like, a very wizened old Italian man making...
Yeah, or a sexy young dynamic Londoner. Yeah, or either of those, yeah. Exactly. One of those ones, right?
Sort of listening to Puccini at the same time.
Yeah.
Cigarette in hand.
Exactly.
Harrowing past.
Harrowing past. A wardrobe stuffed to the gills with fascist memorabilia. And also a little wooden little sort of case he carries around with him, right? With lots of drawers in it. He puts it on the table, he presses the button, all these drawers pop out with like loads and loads of different moustaches he can wear for different occasions. And also moustaches he's worn in the past. This is the moustache I wore on my daughter's wedding day. Isn't it? That kind of thing.
This is the moustache I wore on the day that I kissed Benito Mussolini's daughter.
And this is the moustache upon which my father's uncle sailed to America.
And actually, this is a lovely little moustache I picked up in Zara. The other day, really good value. made in China, of course, but still, it's mainly synthetic as well, so it's very flammable.
It's a mixture of synthetic and Chinese badger.
Yes, that sort of thing. Yeah,
a little xenophobic character there from Three Bean Salad.
A nicely rounded xenophobic character there, to be fair to us. This is my ping pong moustache. Sorry.
Okay.
Hey, wrap it up. We all know that the idea that Italians are obsessed with ping pong is a dangerous, damaging stereotype.
So I first fell in love with these little contraptions when I was actually on holiday in Sicily in an Airbnb, as it happens. And there was one of them in the kitchen. And I didn't know how to use it. But
you did know how to steal it. That chicken has come home to roost, hasn't it?
It has. This is the large moustache I use for shoplifting. It has a secret compartment in the bottom. But I fell in love with it. But basically, it took me the whole week to work it out. It's really hard to work out how to work them. If you ever end up in a situation where you need to make a coffee, but all you've got is one of those ones. Because they're like, they've got four parts, and if you get the metal together in the wrong order,
it explodes. It's like a grenade.
You get like hotter than the center of the sun, hot coffee.
And that's why I use Nescafe Gold Blend.
Much less problematic. But I remember, Mike, when you discovered that, wasn't it? You were staying in a lovely little Airbnb, weren't you, in Derby?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was saying, what? Take 18 working parts into the shower. Not me. I just take a kettle and some dry sachets.
And you have your sort of filthy coffee, sort of brown, nasty coffee shower that you have every morning.
I certainly do.
Yeah. Yeah, no, if you get it wrong, like they go red hot or like gas steams out of it or...
Well, they've got a little tiny little valve on the side that I'm always quite scared of.
Tiny valve, and it's not clear how important is the valve.
It sounds like the sort of valve that when you need it, you really need it.
Yeah, it's one of those valves. I mean, generally people don't put valves on things for fun.
It feels like when you're using one of those things, you are grappling with the very fundamentals of physics. Do you know what I mean?
You really are. It's pure naked hard physics.
Yeah, like you could turn gravity upside down if you got it wrong, and suddenly everything's on the ceiling.
And the stakes are so high because if I don't have a morning bloody coffee, I'll tell you what, it will be a nuclear explosion. Yeah, good stuff.
Put it on a tea towel.
Yeah, it could tie in with the Oppenheimer film. It was quite tasteful but fun. Yeah.
Koffenheimer? No.
Koffenheimer. Tell you what, don't about the Manhattan Project, but if I don't have my morning espresso, then...
Come on.
It really will be World War III. Similar. Yeah.
Oh, by the way, I saw Oppenheimer last week.
Oh, yeah?
Did you?
Good film. That's as far as I go.
Really putting your neck on the line there, Ben.
Yeah.
So basically what happens is when you're trying to grapple with one of these coffee makers, right, the stakes are really high because you want a coffee, A. B, the temperatures are in crazy, we're talking about, because everything is metal. It's just sheer metal. There's very little in the way of rubberized padding or towelette hand grips.
Your classic meltables and flammables.
It's all your meltables and flammables. It feels like you want to operate it with those gloves and through a glass wall like people operate, you know, plutonium and stuff. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like one of those kinds of things. And I tell you what, you might need a couple of those. You have to have a meeting with me before I've had my morning Nespresso. Yeah? It's good stuff. So, but you have, basically what happens is you end up having to operate it using oven gloves, which are incredibly, are a blunt tool at the best of times.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because they got so little.
Well, as soon as you've got the oven gloves on, the dashability of that coffee pot, the chances of you dashing it onto the ground are incredibly high.
Do you mean deliberately dashing in a state of anger?
No, I mean, I mean like an accidental dash. Oh, I've dashed it onto the floor.
I've dashed it onto the floor. Yeah, it's so easy to dash. And also, you're trying to untwist things.
Presumably, you have to have the correct footwear to even start this process, then, if that's the case.
For the love of God, you have to be wearing Italian, lovely Italian slip-ons to do any of this. Otherwise, it's very, very dangerous.
Hobnailed slip-ons.
Hobnailed Italian slip-ons.
But I'll tell you what, you You wish you were wearing running shoes if you come across Henry before he's had his morning coffee in the morning.
Yeah, oh, come on, mate. Nice.
Just get, I'm just joining
really
in.
Good, actually.
I'm joining in.
Fair play. Everyone has a... Yeah, everyone... You can. You can pile on. Have fun. And I'm only saying that because I actually have had my morning coffee, because if I hadn't had my morning coffee, I wouldn't actually be in favour of you piling on for the jokes about my morning coffee. Right. Because you're having to untwist things and it's red hot. You're having to... you're wearing oven gloves. It's like, you know... It's, you feel like a panda suddenly, like a useless panda. Do you mean when you're in oven gloves? You just can't do anything. You're trying to untwist things. The temperatures are red hot. You twist things on or...
You're stuffing fistfuls of bamboo into your mouth.
You're just stuffing fistfuls of bamboo into your mouth. And what happens is, right, it's a bit like a sort of Rubik's Cube or like a sort of Crystal Maze challenge or something. You're looking at this thing and it's only got four parts. And it can't be that hard. But every time you experiment, it's at high temperatures. It's highly stressful. And there's a few... metal discs which can be one way or the other. Mm-hmm. And here's the important bit, and here's the bit which is going to bring us back home safely and land this anecdote nice and safe, nice mm-hmm. and smooth. A rubberized, replaceable sort of
gasket.
I was going to say sort of synthetic sphincter, but I think maybe gasket is it. It's like a rubber ring.
Yeah, it's a gasket.
Mm-hmm. Is that a gasket? Okay.
Yeah. They made it that word to stop people saying rubberized. Semi-synthetic sphincter.
Yeah. Susan Gasket was very sensitive about any sort of arse talk.
She really was. She didn't like it at all.
Painted the word.
Yeah.
Well, it was named after her rubber arse, wasn't it? She was the first person to have a rubber anus transplant.
Sick and bloody tired of talking about it. Thanks very much.
Yeah. But basically, long story short, the way it works is that essentially, in the Industrial Revolution...
Oh, my God.
In old Turin.
I think almost everything has a rubberized gasket in it, doesn't it? Which is the bit that you replace. What's happened is my one, I haven't changed mine for about a year. My gasket's gone brown. It's swelling. It's bloated. I've got a bloated gasket. And what that means is as soon as something tiny stops working in the system, my coffee machine becomes this like hell beast, terrifying, impossible to predict monster. And it just stops. It's completely stopped making coffee. But all that heat energy is still going into it from the hob. And what happens is essentially completely, your guess is as good as mine when this happens. Like anything can happen almost. So what happened this time is crispy bubbles. Black, I'm not joking, foul smelling black crispy bubbles are happening around the base of the machine.
Yeah. And you're trapped in one now, aren't you? Acoustics are quite good.
I'm talking to you through one of them. Actually, perfect place to record a podcast, tell me.
Should we turn on the bee machine?
Yes, please.
Okay, this week's topic, sent in by Matt from Newcastle.
Thank you, Matt.
Is the beach.
Interesting. My thing with the beach is that, I think the beach is that you want it until you're there.
Yes.
That's what I have with the beach.
You get bored on beach holidays, don't you, after a couple of days? See, I don't experience this at all.
I get bored within minutes. I'm like, where's the stimulation? Where are the ideas? Where's Pinter? I mean, I've got a book of Pinter on, obviously, with me because I'm at the beach. But where's actual Pinter? Where actually is Pinter?
Where's Harold?
Where is it? Where's Harold? Come to me, Harold. All feels a bit boring, doesn't it?
You need stimulation.
I need stimulation. I need ideas.
Like a sort of 10-year-old boy.
Or like a great intellectual.
I don't think I've ever been on a beach holiday as an adult. The closest I've done is, actually, I went to Kefalonia.
Yeah.
There was some beach action, but there was also some, you know, ancient palace of the virgins, you know, that kind of business.
Okay.
Yeah.
Some cultural hits, some historical.
Yeah, historical hits.
Yeah, I could idle away huge, huge, huge swathes of time.
Just really?
Bobbing about in the sea, frankly. Read a murder mystery or one of my Le Carrés. You know, no problem.
Me, a Grisham and the sea.
Yeah. The most tedious memoir ever written.
A series of accounts of what he can remember from various Grishams.
And out of various club sandwiches.
And a series of complaints about various different hired snorkel masks and the various ways in which they didn't fully work. And a lingering question at the end of the book, of course, is that because of the snorkel mask or because of Mike's tapering face? Maybe it's hard for a rubberized face sphincter to get enough bite, to get enough hold on Mike's face. That's the rubberized bit around a snorkel mask I'm referring to. That's a really good example of that's a great example of a rubber gasket, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's the gasket which sometimes...
It's your face gasket.
Is a matter of life and death. So, Mike, when you're on holiday, because you know those cheesy, what they call those cheesy breadcrumb covered little cheesy little sort of like a goujon but without the chicken in it, you know, like a cheesy
yeah,
they're Dutch.
It would be called like a cheese bite or something, wouldn't it?
A cheese bite,
yeah.
Which you sometimes get those at a buffet in a restaurant. But essentially, what I'm at a breakfast buffet. Do you shove those up the sides of your mask to help with the snorkeling? Or is it just anything you can grab from the buffet? Do you try different things on different days of the holiday? So like chicken escalops?
For buoyancy. Yeah. Well, the buffet, there's two categories. There's getting your free lunch out of the breakfast buffet, isn't there?
Which is important.
That's crucial. And then there's buoyancy.
Yeah, buoyancy devices.
You want flotation devices, but you also want some dense hams because you do want to get down to the lower depths as well to be able to get a sort of bit of a balance.
So you're talking about full ham wetsuit?
Ideally, yes. If you can...
Yeah,
if you can manage a sort of a salami shorty, I find that's the perfect thing.
That's right. Really. And then what you'll have is you'll have a buoyancy quiche, right? which you hold in one hand. And as you release slices of the quiche, you can adjust your buoyancy. Only down, though, presumably. I mean,
you can't add more slices of quiche. Unless you've got, on the other hand, you've got another quiche.
Yeah, and eventually the dates and yogurt will kick in, and that will produce a bit of gas that you can use to float back up to the surface at a safe pace.
Yeah, and really quite delicate. Now, you know, you can just lower yourself a couple of centimetres down, for example, to get a better shot of a moray eel, for example. You can lower yourself a couple of centimetres down, can't you, just by, say, spitting out
moray eels. There's no sort of flora or fauna or anything like that. It's all just sort of, you know, wherever I go on my beach holidays, everything is dead. It's just, you know, what different size shoes can you find? Maybe abandoned nappy. Perhaps some other snorkelling kit that's been left behind and has sunk to the bottom.
Yeah. Yeah, and you love all that, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
But the whole thing started, isn't it, just simple, because you had that gap between snorkel mask and your cheeks.
Yeah.
But just shoving a couple of deviled eggs up at each side, wasn't it? And it's just something you hadn't even...
It's just what I'd taken out of the buffet at the time, which is what I had to hand at the time.
You just had them on you anyway.
Well, like a dream.
Just to build out the face a bit.
Yeah, and the deviling process helps actually to keep the glass clear, the perspex clear on that. On the mask itself.
But that's why you've actually become quite good at facial prosthetics, haven't you? Because when you mould that, say, pureed tuna, for example, it's actually quite similar to human flesh, isn't it?
Pureed tuna is very, very good indeed. Or a quite badly made mushroom omelette as well. It's just the right texture.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely don't use pureed tuna in any situation which that could be basically misconstrued as chum by any kind of man-eating sharks.
That's why I don't holiday in the Caribbean.
Yeah.
Because you can actually create a feeding frenzy, can't you, of a mixture of barracuda, great white sharks, orca, and actual tourists from the hotel next door. Everyone was coming around trying to get a piece.
Yeah, it's strictly Mediterranean resorts that have been ruined by the British.
Yeah.
Come on, Mike, and the Dutch. Give them their due.
The Dutch and the Deutsch have played a part, absolutely. Yeah. Certainly. Yeah. But there's been it's a systematic Northern European battering of a previously beautiful Spanish town.
Yeah. And for you, it's a successful snorkeling trip. If you come back and people are like, well, do you see anything good? And be like, yeah, I read the instructions on the back of a packet of German condoms.
Yeah. And my squits only lasted one day this time. Yeah. And your budget for that.
You budget for it.
Yeah.
And the squits also, of course, has also operated as chum, hasn't it, to your
Oh, you'll be seeing it again the next day, absolutely, yeah. Staining the waves.
So what's your sort of beach policy, the two of you? Do you go on one of those, like, wooden beach beds that go with a resort or go with a restaurant, or are you getting your towel straight down on the sand?
No, because there'll be a surcharge for them. It's towel all the way.
Yeah.
Or just the bare hot sand.
Itself. And for you, avoiding a surcharge is part of the fun. It's actually, don't see it as it's not a negative, is it? Avoiding a surcharge, you are embracing not paying a surcharge. Like it's a thing. It's a positive, isn't it? It's like it's fun.
Yeah, you got a bunch of pineapple chunks and hams from the buffet that are drying out on your towel. Yeah. They're for lunch, but later on, you haven't paid for that. Paid for that, but well in advance. Not paid for your towel. Seas free. In you go.
If your kids want that something to read, you've got the safety instructions from the plane, which you snaffled. It's a comic book, isn't it?
It's a tragic, tragic comic book.
You've got the little free pillows from the plane as well.
Yeah. Yeah, they work very well as a sort of not particularly effective parasol.
Yeah.
What I like about the British beach experience is how crucial the windbreak is.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, it's a British summertime when you're like hammering in a windbreak so that you can basically exist on the beach without catching something.
So you can do anything absolutely basic.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's got nothing to do with modesty at all.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
What is the windbreak? I don't think I've ever heard about
that. That's when it'll normally be like a series of brightly coloured horizontal stripes, fabric, quite plasticky fabric, separated by wooden stakes that you ram into the shingle of the British beach. In order to protect your barbecue equipment, to protect your cans.
Your pasty children.
From the cold north wind.
Yeah, exactly. It's not really for modesty. That's still very much like if you're getting into your swimmers, you have to observe the tradition of doing that with a towel wrapped around yourself. And you know that at least one aunt is going to let something slip at some point, and it's going to be great fun.
I use the towel system. By the way, I was using the towel system the other day in the changing room at the place where I do spinning.
Yeah.
So, which is it's a form of cycling that's on the spot. In the changing room there, I use and have my whole life and probably, I imagine, always will, I use the beach getting changed system in changing rooms, in swimming pools, sports places, whatever, wherever. I get the towel around. I've got a Solero in one hand.
You do it at the side of the pool.
Do it at the side. But whereas obviously some people don't do that. It's a bit weird.
I think I'm very much in the camp of, you know, we've all seen a man's naked body before.
Yeah. So why should the receptionist be any different? No special rules, is it, in reception? All right.
No, but I think I am the guy in the changing rooms, you know, shamelessly toweling off my balls.
Right. You are that guy.
Yeah.
Are you?
Cloud upon cloud of hot talc.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So, Ben, you see, it's interesting that you're that guy, because the other day I was thinking about that guy and thinking, what is that guy's problem, essentially?
No, but what is your problem?
So I was doing my thing, which is I humbly go to the darkest corner of the changing room. I face the wall. I humbly...
Conceal your shame.
I conceal my shame. I wear a black hooded cassock.
You start the Gregorian chanting.
All flesh is sin. All flesh is. I then release two decoy Henrys. So there's two. So a bit like that scene at the end of that film,
The Matrix.
Now you know that film where it's Piers Brosnan being an art thief.
Oh yeah.
The Thomas Crown Affair?
The Thomas Crown Affair. Do you remember what he does at the end?
He starts toweling himself off.
He starts toweling himself off in a bowler hat.
And it turns out no one wants to sort of, everyone just sort of looks really embarrassed for a bit and he runs off. All the police are too embarrassed to arrest him. At the end of that film, he releases into the art gallery like 50 or like 100 people who are dressed exactly the same as him. Yeah. So they don't know who to arrest. It's brilliant. It's really good. I did a similar sort of thing. I hire a couple of decoy Henrys that look a bit like me.
Jason Statham and... Vin Diesel.
But I just very humbly and modestly go about, you know, get changed. Whereas there's some guys just standing there with their legs on the bench, and I feel like, and I had this question: like, are they making a point? Are they trying to? Is this some sort of like territory thing, or are they? What are they trying to make a point, or are they just totally relaxed people? Because I've got this thing like my monkey, my baboon brain is going.
Your baboon brain's going. Reveal your ass. Pump it full of blood. The moon is high.
And then I shall decide whether or not you are my new king.
Yeah.
My baboon whale going, flood the arse pipes, engorge, engorge.
Be the alpha.
Yeah, so part of me is going, like, yeah, this is do or die. I've got to defeat this person through arse size or by trying to kill him with my fingernails or just something horrific's got to happen because this is absolute war. In biological baboon terms, this is a declaration of arse war. Do you know what I mean? That is going on in your blood, in your brain system, partly. Yeah. And partly it's just thinking...
And one of you is going to end up rolling on your back, presenting all of your rudders up into the sky.
Yeah.
Total submission.
Yeah. Vanquished. So I've got the udders are ready to go. I've got the arse and the udders. They're both... Well, I've tried to mainly engorge the arse because you don't but it's nice to have the udders as a backup, so I have slightly engorged them. You know, the really confident move would be just to engorge the arse and leave the udders.
Let's hope something else is entirely unengorged. Let's just put it that way.
I've completely de-engorged my face.
Feeling a bit lightheaded at this point. To concentrate.
My face looks like when you put a pack of crisps in the oven and it shrinks up. That's what my facial features are. It's like a mini version of my face. Facial features in the middle of my head. but my ass is more than made up for it because it's absolutely huge.
And blue.
As blue as the skies of my fatherland. Maybe I'll go back there one day. But in the meantime, I'm going to wave my huge ass around.
A municipal changing room.
Municipal changing rooms. So part of me is thinking, this is a declaration of war from an arrogant baboon that seeks to take not one, but all of my mates and all of my territory.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to cover my face with his musk, probably. Yeah. All kinds of horrible, like horrible, horrible, primal stuff is happening. Part of me is thinking that. And the other part of me is thinking, he's probably just like a geography teacher who's quite happy in himself. Has three kids, really nice guy, and he's just quite relaxed.
He's congratulating himself that he's managed to make it out for a swim for once on his lunch break.
Yeah, exactly. Good thing he's managed to get the swim in now because it means he'll be in good shape, taking his daughter out tonight for his seventh birthday. No, you're not, mate. You're about to die at the hands of my ass. It's too late.
Better cancel TGI Fridays.
Oh my God.
That table's free tonight.
Because you're getting smothered, my friend.
You're getting your throat ripped out by an arse.
Yeah, yeah. And sure, maybe the last thing you do see with it is my semi-engorged udders. What could have been yours?
It's time to plug some stuff. Live shows. We're doing Machynlleth Comedy Festival. I thought they were sold out, but they're not.
Two dates.
We're doing two dates, and the Saturday at midday is sold out, but the Sunday at midday is not sold out.
Very good.
So, if you're at Mach Comedy Festival.
2024, in case you're listening, in the distant future.
Yes. And I think that's on May the...
Something.
Something.
Yes,
first,
correct.
It's the first weekend of May. I'll put a link in the show notes to that. If you're going to be in Mach, come along.
Mm-hmm. It's May the 5th.
May the 5th.
Sunday, May the 5th is not sold out. So please come.
Manchester, we're doing live shows in April, and there will be some more tickets on sale for those, hopefully, but we're not sure when.
Very good. April 24th, that is, Wednesday.
But I'm waiting for an email from a man called John.
Very good.
Sounds solid.
Sounds trustworthy.
Yeah.
But I'll put a link to the ticket page in the show notes, because I think that they're running a waiting list, so you can add your email address to that, and then you'll be on the waiting list.
Oh, lovely.
And we're also doing a live show in Bristol on the 15th of April.
We certainly are, Tobacco Factory.
By the time this goes out, I think the Patreon pre-sale will have opened, and then general sale is opening on Wednesday the 27th, on the day that this comes out. I think that's 5:30. And that's the Tobacco Factory Theatre.
Get stuck in. Get involved. Yeah. Come and see a live show. And we're, you know, hopefully we'll have more in the future, other places. We're just, you know, dipping our toe in the water, really.
But we're seeing the show, aren't we, at the moment? We're seeing it as ABBA Journey Unplugged.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Isn't it?
ABBA Journey. ABBA Voyage.
we're not allowed to say ABBA Voyage, are we?
I see. But just to confirm, we will be holograms, so we won't be there.
No, no.
We won't be there.
No.
Yeah. So we'll be unplugged.
Yeah.
But what you watch will very much be plugged in, because it will be holograms.
Yeah.
And I think, is it fair to say that our aspiration is to do some maybe bigger dates or bigger tour at some point.
Yeah, we want to get about. We're just sort of dipping our toe. It's just what we're able to do at the moment. We're quite excited to see if people are up for coming down, coming on down in a couple of cities. But
testing the waters.
We'd like to get all over the place, you know.
Derby,
the Highlands, the Lowlands, Svalbard.
Uninhabited island. What's it called, that place?
Inaccessible island. And of course, Bremen.
So yes, there'll be links in the show description here for tickets for that stuff.
I've got a plug too, please, if you don't mind, while we're on plugs.
Plug away.
So this is for a novel, particularly those who might be interested in a thriller type novel. This is by J.S. Brough, spelt B-R-O-U-G-H, which is a local to me, in fact, this author. Debut novel called Finding Nowhere, The Barefoot Chronicles. And just want to let people know it exists, really, because I thoroughly enjoyed it. It's excellent. Surfing.
What's it about?
Surfing thriller type thing. Thriller, basically. Bunch of surf guys from Cornwall get into all sorts of scrapes, basically. Nice. So there's gangland stuff, there's crime, nasty business. There's Hebridean action going on.
Sounds excellent.
And action-packed thriller.
What's it called again?
It is called Finding Nowhere, The Barefoot Chronicles by J.S. Brough.
Okay, time to read your emails.
Yes, please.
When you send an email, you must give thanks to the postmasters that came before.
Good morning, postmaster. Anything for me?
Just some old shit.
When you send an email, this represents progress. Like a robot shoeing a horse.
Give me your horse.
My beautiful horse.
Thanks to everyone who sent us an email to threebeansaladpod@gmail.com. We've had some really good emails this week. I mean, we always have good emails, but this week it feels particularly... The mailbag is particularly bulging this week, I would say.
Okay.
Lovely.
And so I'm going to give you a selection of topics and you can choose what topics you want to hear the emails about. So we can either have carveries, Stonehenge,
yep.
Our kind of burgeoning Pompidou discount actors agency,
yep.
Or magistrates.
Oh my, wow, what a great selection.
Oh, and also, I'm also going to put in wildcard.
Okay.
/ misc. Okay.
I think I'd lurch towards carvery or misc, personally, in the first instance.
Let's start with misc, then, get out of the way. This is from Nell.
Hello, Nell.
Dear Beans, while listening to the latest episode of Three Bean Salad today, I put a drill through my hand.
Oh, God.
All the best, Nell.
Oh, God.
I'm hoping that's just the drill bit and not the whole drill.
Including the cable and plug.
And instructions. sorry, Nell.
Oh, Nell. Oh, good grief.
Nell doesn't explicitly blame us for this, but I feel like that's implied, right?
I think so.
I think it is implied, isn't it? I think. Luckily, they didn't hear the death knell. They're still alive. They survived it.
Is that a pun on Nell's name?
It was a bit, wasn't it?
Well done.
No worries. Absolutely no worries at all.
Let's hope that's some degree of comfort to...
Really sorry, Nell. I mean, I'm hoping it would have gone through the, in between the...
Just the kind of webbed bit.
Hopefully it would have just gone through the webbed bit, yeah.
I'm not saying you've got webbed hands now, but I mean, you know, everyone's got a bit of web, haven't they?
Yeah, everyone's got a bit of web. Hopefully it just would have gone through some finger webbing. Or maybe...
Through one of the ornamental bits of the hand.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Or the display finger.
Rather than like full stigmata, sort of right.
Yeah, we don't want full stigmata.
Yeah.
If you take away your little finger, it doesn't make any difference. You don't really need the little finger, I don't think. And you can lose a finger. I think you lose one finger, it's just like a talking point, isn't it? And in agricultural circles, I mean, it's embarrassing not to have lost a finger, isn't it? A full set of 10. If you're what's known as a full 10 in agricultural circles,
means you work shy.
Means you work shy.
Our best wishes, Nell. Hope that is healing up nicely.
Yeah.
Best of luck, Nell. And I hope you did get up to put up that painting or shelf or whatever it was.
Okay, Henry, would you like carvery, Stonehenge, Pompidou Discount Actors Agency, or magistrates?
Well, I don't just want a cakewalk of people thanking me for my Stonehenge take giving me sort of high fives and stuff. So that would be a bit self-indulgent. So instead, I think I'll go for, maybe I'll go for Carvery.
Okay. We've had two emails about the Carvery.
Yep.
Cool. One is from Mike, and the subject title is Carvery Tactics.
Mm. Oh, God.
I'm writing to you to inform you of a tactic I've heard, but I'm way too cowardly to attempt. It works on the principle that you get the same amount of meat regardless of if you opt for one or three.
Okay.
If this is the Trojan meat, is this going to be the Trojan meat one?
I'm not sure what that means. What, you go into the Carvery inside a wooden horse?
Yeah. You go inside into the Carvery inside an actual horse that's dressed as a cow. And it means you try and go in through the meat entrance. The trouble is, it is an incredibly risky policy to secrete yourself in as meat and therefore take on the Carvery from the inside. Do you see what I mean? In the dead of night, you break out of the...
You just got to hope you're not roasted first, basically.
Exactly, yeah.
So he says, it works on the principle that you get the same amount of meat regardless of if you opt for one or three, e.g., you either get 300 grams of chicken or you get 100 grams each of chicken, pork, and beef.
No idea what you're talking about. Can't follow it. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm completely with you. Thanks, Ben. Yeah.
300 grams, did you say?
Grams, yeah, which is a measurement of weight or mass. Yeah,
it's not all about street drugs. And the problem is we use grams to measure meat.
So is that how it works in a Carvery? Is it by weight? Do you order 300 grams?
That's what he's saying. He's giving it as just a random example. He's clarifying his point.
So, because Ben is a Carvery expert here.
Yeah.
Is it the case in a Carvery that you go in and they weigh the meat like a pick-a-mix, like a disgusting, hellish pick-a-mix?
No, the meat master has discretion.
He'll eyeball it. Is what they're saying, that he'll have a good sense of the weight.
If you spent your entire life chopping bits of meat up, you tend to get a good sense.
So he'll look at what you've chosen and decide how much it weighs and charge you accordingly.
His thick butcher's hands are like the very scales of justice.
Exactly.
Okay. In terms of, that's a lovely metaphor, but in terms of cold hard pricing, how does it actually work?
You pay your money, and then you're getting a certain amount of meat.
Oh, I see. And are there different amounts of money for different amounts of meat you can pay, different tiers?
No. Well, I know that, well, sort of, actually, because sometimes you can get different size plates. You can go for the big oval plate.
Okay.
Maybe they check a bit more meat on, I'm not sure. Anyway, so this tactic that Michael has sent in is based on the principle that you get the same grammage of meat no matter how many different kinds of meat you go for.
Oh, I see.
Okay.
Interesting.
So he says, when the meat master asks you what you want, you reply, just chicken, please. As they've carved your 200th gram of chicken... So that's two-thirds of your overall.
Okay.
You say, oh, actually, go on then. I'll have all three. The meat master then has a decision to make. And assuming they do not give two shits about their job, you then get 100 grams each of the other two meats. Voila. You now have 400 grams of low to medium standard meat.
To the idea that the meat master has no passion for their
Is he their suggesting job. That the meat master has such thick hands that he can't operate in 50-gram... sort of units. Yeah. Is 100 gram the smallest unit he can cut?
Maybe he abhors the 50 gram cut.
Yeah.
And won't do it.
It's an interesting idea. I suspect it's one of those things where the house always wins. It's like a casino, isn't it? In terms of, you can go, people go into casinos and there's always someone who's got a theory which is no. If you put everything on black, then double your stake the next time and put everything on red. Then even if you lose, you double your stake again and put everything on black. You know, like, there's like logical...
Yeah, they sort of have a system. They think they've gamed it, yeah.
Yeah, and that's essentially what's going on here.
You think they're going to claw this back somehow? Maybe when you're like getting the gravy, you know, like they'll claw it back elsewhere.
Yeah, I'll claw it back. Also, there'll be you might find yourself whisked out because like a casino, there'll be cameras trained on every corner.
Yeah.
Looking for meat scammers.
Yeah. And ultimately, like 100 grams either way is not going to make any difference when it's basically just some sort of wet matter, really, rather than,
Exactly. See, what I might try and do is mess with the guy. I'd go in and go, I've got 300 grams to play with, have I, sir? Okay, thank you. I'll start with 1 gram of lamb. Okay. Then I'll have another gram of chicken. Then another gram of beef. And just see how far I can push it like that, doing 1 gram of each.
But I think what you're forgetting there is is you've got a growing queue of very hungry British people behind you wanting to get there.
That's true.
That and quite a lot of sharp knives around as well.
Yeah. Hot projectiles.
Never slight a man with a meat cleaver.
Mike says, no idea if this works, and I will not be trying it for fear of being called out and also my absolute inability to think on my feet. Have a lovely day, Mike.
Okay. Thank you, Mike. Mm. Interesting. So he's, okay, it's all games and theory with Mike.
Would you try that, Ben?
I think I will try it next time, yeah. Try and game it a bit.
No.
Mm.
Now, we've had another email on the topic of carveries, and this is from someone called Mike.
Is that another Mike?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mike's love carveries.
That's true.
This Mike is in Whitley Bay. He says, hi, Beans. I'd like to add my own recent carvery experience. Once we were at the table, I took my son up to the meat master so he'd get a good experience of his old man unsuccessfully bartering for extra meat.
It's so medieval. The meat master. There's so much lore around it.
When we got back to our seats and started tucking in, he started complaining that the gravy tasted sweet. Mm. Of course, I assured him that he was wrong and he should just eat up his food. But when I tasted my own gravy, there was indeed something amiss. The next table, and then the next table, could be heard discussing the gravy, until a groundswell of British moaning gave way to somebody actually mentioning it to a member of staff.
Whoa.
The affected plates were taken away, and the hungry customers were encouraged to go up to the meatmaster station for a second time. When I got there, I could see that he was processing something that he could barely believe.
Was he making sausages on the side?
With a shake of his head, I overheard him saying to a passing waiter, he put the fucking toffee sauce in the fucking gravy. I tried to leverage this into a shared moment of resigned bafflement and good humour to secure some more beef, but to no avail. I just can't get a read on those guys. Keep up the good work. Yours, Mike in Whitley Bay.
Do you think he'd recently discovered salted caramel and was going for a kind of sweet and savoury thing?
I think he was trying to Heston Blumenthal it. Yeah, he was
trying to Blumenthal it, yeah.
Getting above his station.
Yeah.
Mike, back to you. Would you like a letter about Stonehenge, the Pompidou Discount Acting Agency, or magistrates?
I'll have your friend of mine, Stonehenge, please. I'll be seeing Stonehenge later on.
Ah. This is Tina from Bremen.
Thank you, Tina.
Hi, Tina.
Many years ago, as an archaeology undergrad, I went on a field trip to the Stones with my peers under the supervision of one lecturer. We boarded our hired coach from London early in the morning for the long drive to Wiltshire, accompanied by a breakfast consisting of a bottle of rosé and some cans of cider.
Nice. Bloody typical archaeologists, aren't they? Absolute rank rascals, yeah.
You should have seen when they turned the cameras off when they were making time team.
What? Bloody hell.
You don't need to dig to see the last days of Rome when the time team goes around.
And what they'll do to a harvester, it will actually, you know, you'll need a trowel to actually recuperate any evidence of that harvester even existing the next day.
As we were walking around the site, my friend S kept saying that he really wanted to run up and touch the stones. Our lecturer told him that he could, but to wait until we'd finished our visit, since his actions would result in us being thrown out.
Mm.
She gave the signal to S when we were done with our trip, and quick as a flash, my stocky Welsh friend jumped the ropes and ran towards the stones, sometimes disappearing into the ditches that surround them. The English heritage wardens gave chase, and when he finally touched the stones, he walked back with his arms in the air in an act of surrender. He was taken to the site manager, who gave him a telling off. While all the staff were engaged in the kerfuffle of S touching the stones, two of our other friends were robbing the gift shop.
Nice.
Of English heritage chocolate bars and a cookbook about prehistoric food.
It's absolutely outrageous.
What a chaotic trip. I wouldn't recommend anyone try to repeat this now. This was nearly 20 years ago, and the security of the stones and the shop have been considerably ramped up since. All the best, Tina. Oh, that's really tickled me.
That's amazing. I love
good Lord.
That's very good.
Halcyon days, eh? Wowzers.
Just people spotting an opportunity and going for it.
It's a marauding pack.
But also a timely reminder of the effectiveness of decoys in general, isn't it? If you've got a problem in your life, just think about the decoy option.
Send a Welshman running across a field.
Send a stocky Welsh friend running across a field.
And the cookbook will be yours.
It's a classic in the confusion situation, isn't it?
Yeah.
And in the confusion.
S. Probably yeah. Stefan, I'm guessing.
Swiped a prehistoric cookbook.
So if anyone knows any archaeologists called Stefan, maybe have a quiet word.
All right, Henry, last email. You get to choose between the Pompidou Discount Acting Agency or magistrates.
I'm going to go for magistrates, please.
Okay. Dearest Beans, I'm a barrister in Yorkshire and was fascinated to hear that one of your listeners has become a magistrate. I started my career prosecuting in magistrates' court and can confirm that magistrates absolutely have the power to send particularly naughty crims to prison.
Oh, wow.
So I think we claimed last time that it was non-prison, non-prison crimes.
Bollocks.
In fact, one of my first cases, the chap I was prosecuting got sent down for a few months for going bonkers and assaulting a lot of police officers. He was, and this is a legal term, so off his bonce on drugs that he could not be subdued by officers, even though he was, quote, tasered to fuck.
God.
And he was heard shouting at officers, I'm on my way to an archaeology meeting.
Needless to say, his refusal to undertake any unpaid work, quote, because he likes to chill out at the weekends, led to the jangle of keys and him being led out of court via the naughty door. So they can lock you up. They don't use gavels. And in fact, gavels disappointingly play no part in the legal system at all, which is frankly a disgrace. I do wonder if I can deploy a cheeky Pompidou next time I'm in front of the Yorkshire magistrate, just to see if I get a little glimmer of recognition. It may be difficult to organically build it into my submissions, so any suggestions would be welcome.
Your story is as transparent as the tubes on the Pompidou Centre.
There we go.
Sustained.
I object, just as the people of Paris objected when Pompidou himself, Dr. Pompidou, attempted to build a building with the pipes on the outside.
Very good. Overruled by the same token in the way that the French people have eventually grown to love that particular building. Very good.
Yeah. Very doable. Thank you.
It's quite terrifying, the power of a magistrate, isn't it? They can put you in prison without a jury.
Yeah.
Pretty frightening.
It's great. We've got one in our pocket, though, so.
That's true.
We can now jail anyone we want, basically.
Yeah.
I think that's how it works. I think that's what he's saying. Yeah.
I think our previous emailer, Tina, might have to be worried. You know, she's confessed to the crime of stealing a book about prehistoric cooking.
We've got Tina over a barrel. We've got the keys to the archaeology kingdom there, you see. Yeah.
So we can put anyone we like in prison as long as they commit an offence which ends up putting them in a magistrate's court in front of that specific magistrate.
Exactly. It's that simple.
It's as simple as that. And also, there are presumably various checks and balances, which mean that he'll only be able to put them in prison if they really are guilty of it, obviously.
She's confessed to stealing a prehistoric cooking book.
I wonder what kind of recipes you get in a prehistoric cooking book. Maybe she can tell us.
Some kind of early lasagna.
It'd be raw, though, wouldn't it? Raw lasagna. Just killed and skinned, and that's it.
And the person who sent us that email wants to remain anonymous.
Fair play.
Fair enough, yeah.
Brilliant.
Thanks very much. Great emails.
Thanks to everyone who signed up on our Patreon.
Thank you.
If you sign up on Patreon, you can get ad-free episodes. You can get our bonus episodes. Also, just because a few people were confused about this and sent me an email, if you do sign up to Patreon, you can listen to the Patreon episodes on any podcast catcher of your choosing, including Spotify. You don't have to use the Patreon app. That's a quite boring bit of admin there, but
yeah.
Some people were getting confused. So there are various tiers you can sign up to. If you sign up to the Sean Bean tier, you get a shout out from Mike from the Sean Bean Lounge, where you were last night, Mike.
Yeah, of course it was, yeah. Because it was the...
it was Tweed Wars.
It was Tweed Wars.
Wasn't it?
And here's my report. It was Tweed Wars last night at the Sean Bean Lounge. Adam Hodder, sporting a classic herringbone, challenged the room to an all-at-once or one-at-a-time tweed-off. Steph Savage consulted the raw fleece. One-at-a-time was authorised and an orderly if pugnacious queue formed. At the front was Anousia, who was quickly dispatched despite using hand-to-hand Donegal, followed swiftly by Lydia Smith with a vicious basket weave. Scary Troutman was next up with a classic window pane below the belt, and then it was Biblio Boy's bird's eye elbow butt. Sophie Russell, her blood up, detwizzled Hodder, allowing Tim C to unroll him from the neck down, and Will Peckham Walker to feed him back into the carding machine operated by Tom S, with freshly spiked rollers donated by Simon and Pamela. Jess Cowley fed the now half-turned Hodder onto a brawler's bobbin, where he was knuckle-softened by Tom McLarty, deloused by Jake Sarm, wefted silly by Kaylee Evans, warped by John Edwards until Dan Shedd had tears in his eyes, and kidney-loomed by Shira Adrians. Katie Cook, in a barleycorn war helmet, then blew the woolen battle bugle, and the scene descended into a much-desired free-for-all tweed melee. Erin Considine overchecked Suze O'Toole, while Tim Bobs found himself tartaned to a month of Sundays by Laura Bunny. Matt was plaided to a heap by Lee Sarah Hendricks and Andrew Jordan, who in turn were folded into a bale of sorrow by Thomas Robinson and Luke McBratney. Stu Cullum dyed Jesse Hayne lime green, Krutika, Bastard's Mustard, Marie Sandland, Country Crotal, and Max Flintoff 1% pink. Elsewhere, Tommy Boy Neil and Daniel Gibbons attacked Max Price and Ben Melrose with a plain twill, but hadn't counted on being pincered by Maggie Parvow riding a striped Harris. Louis Smith, Rory Patterson, Wang Morang, and Samantha Blatchford made the unprecedented choice en masse to weigh in with fusion fabrics. Twelvet, Twilk, Twylon, and Twolyester, respectively. They were all made short work of by Harry Harvey, Amy Lay, and Kathy, who bundled them into the back of a decoy wardrobe and sold them cut price at a high-end charity shop in London's fashionable Chelsea. All that remained was to find a winner. By this time, few were left standing other than Tom Hammond in a Shetland and Sam Calderbank in a Thornproof, who were on the cusp of declaring a truce and therefore a draw, when Leanna from Wisconsin swept in from behind a pile of Yorkshire Soft and thrashed them into the ground, gamekeeper style. Congratulations to Leanna and to the Badger State, and thanks all.
Okay, that's the end of the show. We'll finish off with a version of our theme tune sent in by a listener. This one's from Chris.
Hello, Chris. Thank you.
They write, "Hello, Beans. I feel what the theme tune really needs was to reflect the 1950s panache that your podcast exudes."
Well spotted.
So I've put together the attached Holiday for String Beans in the style of the David Rose Orchestra. Enjoy.
Lovely.
Doesn't mean much to me, but let's see what that is.
Bye.
Thank you, everybody. Bye.
Bye.